Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller, and today on the program, I think we can pretty much cover the whole spectrum here. We can talk about vegetable gardens, we can talk about lawns, we can talk about those perennial flowers that you may still have out there, we can talk about trees, because we have a couple of experts with us today. Mike Maddox, Rock County Extension Horticulture Educator, also works out of the Rotary Gardens in Janesville, Wisconsin. Mike, good to have you back.
Hey, glad to be here.
And also with us today, Kristen Krokowski, who is Waukesha County Extension Commercial Horticulture Educator, works out of Waukesha, Wisconsin. And she has been with us a number of times by phone, but it's a pleasure to have her in the studio. First time we've actually met in person.
It's nice to be here.
Yeah, Kristen, nice to have you with us as well. You know, there are many times I have introduced you as a commercial horticulture educator. And usually on the program, well, we get a lot of questions from homeowners, which is wonderful. But, you know, it might be worth a minute to for you guys to talk a little about your job. What does a commercial horticulture educator really do?
Well, we try to keep people in the green industry kind of ahead of the curve. Emerging insects or disease issues that homeowners might be coming up with, and people are going out to visit those homeowners who don't have background in horticulture issues. That way the professionals can go out there and know what they're dealing with, know the appropriate ways to address it, and kind of have an arsenal of options out there for them. If it's a cultural plan they're looking for, something that doesn't involve any chemicals, we let them know what those options are, and all the way through the spectrum up to the chemicals. So basically what we're trying to do is make sure that everybody's informed, knows responsible chemical use, and just kind of stays ahead of the curve so that they know what's coming down the pike.
Yeah. Mike, anything to add to that?
Oh, from the commercial point of view?
Sure.
You know, sometimes the way I work with a commercial entity is sometimes in their busy peak season where they're getting an onslaught of customers, they're not able to address every question that comes into the audience. So personally in Rock County, what I do is play backup to the commercial entities so they can provide a customer service, a level of customer service beyond what's in-house, where they can say, here, go talk to the UW Extension office and they can further help you with your problem.
Okay.
So that's a difference. I don't have commercial responsibilities as Kristen does.
Yeah. But it's a pretty broad range of things that both of you are responsible for. And I tell you what, Dan and Marinette has a question for you. So why don't we go right there to Dan? Hi, Dan. Thank you for calling.
Thanks, Larry. A couple of years ago, I planted some boxwoods to hopefully make a hedge in a couple of years. And they took a bit of a beating last winter and sort of did okay this summer. I was putting some muriatic acid fertilizer on them towards the end of the summer and got a little bit more green growth coming through, but I was just wondering if there's anything I can do now to either boost them up or protect them to help them get through this winter.
Well, what's coming to mind off the top of my head is protection. With them being an evergreen, you'll need to protect their leaves through the winter to keep them from drying out. So some sort of screening, burlap being put up as a wall on one side of them or around them would help. I'm not a big fan of boxwood, though. We grow them down in Rock County, in just a few spaces at the Botanic Garden. And even in our environment where we're taking a lot of care of them, we have problems with them. And it's actually a plant I typically don't recommend to homeowners who don't want to put a lot of work into them.
Well, now, what would you recommend for a screening, something that would be maybe like a boxwood in terms of screening, but not a boxwood?
Well, if you wanted something that was to be a screen, there's a whole bunch of cultivars of like arborvitae you could choose from that would have different dimensions to them. Or there's something like your basic yew that you could plant and prune and to have the shape that you need for screening. Boxwoods just are too finicky, in my opinion, for this area. And
I would definitely keep them watered until the ground freezes. That will definitely give them a hydrate them really well for the winter. And so if they go into the winter well hydrated, and this was true for all of your woody plants, they have a better chance of taking the winter cold and then coming out in the spring with less winter damage.
Yeah, I've got my hose out yet and still watering. And it's something that we, you know, it gets November and people start, you know, let's get the hose. You know, then you're cleaning up the yard, you're putting everything away, and the, you know, hose, well, you don't want the hose to freeze, so that goes away. And but
what Krista just mentioned, though, is a critical thing for all your evergreens is to keep them well hydrated going into winter.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, good luck, Dan, with those boxwoods. Appreciate it. Laura in Pittsville, we turn to you. Hi, Laura.
Hello there. This year I grew 5 different winter squash and pumpkins all in the same garden. And I've been saving the seeds, and this week I just got to wondering about if I plant these seeds that were growing, you know, the vines were all tangled together, will I still get the true plants? Or is there no telling what I might get?
Oh, well, you'd
be better off to start with fresh purchase seed again next year.
Were they crossing is your question. Then.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, whenever you purchase seeds, they're usually hybrid seeds, which means that two specific plants were bred together to get a specific seed. When you start experimenting with the pollen that's coming from all those different plants and possibly from nearby, you really never know what you're going to get. I would guess that maybe 50% of what you're going to end up with is something you'll recognize really easily that might look exactly like last year's or very similar to last year's squash. But you might also get some other interesting things. That doesn't mean they won't be edible. You're just not sure what kind of flavor or shape they might take.
Okay, and would the pumpkins intermix with the winter squash too?
They're all kind of cousins, so it just
Kissing
depends
cousins.
On when the flowers were open and who was pollinating them. So it's kind of an adventure.
Oh, okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. And Aaron in New Richmond, we're on to you now. Hi, Aaron.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question that I haven't been able to find anybody to answer. I have an oak tree in my front yard. It's a northern pin oak, and it has a split about 3/4 up the trunk that opens in the spring and then shuts.
Mm-hmm.
And it stays shut.
Okay, it's probably just some of the growth going on with the tree or the change in the seasons, but the point is you have a split on your tree. And whenever you have something mechanical done to your tree or something wrong with your tree like that, it can be an opening for decay to form. And my recommendation is to have a certified arborist come out and do an inspection of the tree to make sure there's not decay going on inside there that's going to turn your tree into a risk tree in your landscape.
Okay, cool.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You know, I had a great surprise here about a week ago. I have this a rose bush that we got from Jung's, and beautiful scented rose, very large roses. And the Japanese beetles, you know, of course, during the season, ate them all as quick as they flowered. But we had a big one bloom last week, and it was such a joy. There are no Japanese beetles left. And about 6 more blooms on that. You know, I don't think the rest of them are going to come, but it was really fun to see those, to see that one beautiful rose and not have to worry about a Japanese beetle.
Without that little bordello of beetles on there, yeah.
Oh, boy, it was quite a summer for the Japanese beetles. Let's go to Mark in Onalaska. Hi, Mark. Thank you for calling.
Oh, hello there. Thanks for taking my call. Say, I got a bunch of rhododendrons facing on the east side of my house, and they seem to be growing okay, but the one thing I noticed is this spring, I believe it was last spring also, when they flowered, they only flowered on almost what seemed like exclusively the lower branches, and I thought it was something strange, maybe just unique to my house, but I noticed a couple other rhododendrons people have on the street, it also did the same thing for them, and I was wondering if there's something climate-wise or something I can do so they would kind of improve their look in the springtime.
My guess, and this is only a guess, is that the flower buds on the outer part of the shrub are dying off possibly from the winter.
What's your grow zone? Do you know what zone you're in?
I'm in southwest Wisconsin.
Okay, so he should be at 5.
Yeah.
But some of it depends on how cool the spring is, if it's really cool, and if the winter is very cold. And this is something you've seen the last 2 years.
Yep. Yeah. The last 2 years, it always seems to be the lower branches, and nothing blooms on any of the branches up from just about at ground level.
Yeah. The only thing I'm worried about is nutrient movement through the plant in the spring. If it's not, when it's setting buds, if it's not getting enough nutrients up to the furthest parts up in the plant, there might be an issue.
Yeah. From the way you describe it, there could be a couple different scenarios that I think we need more information. If, you know, maybe take a couple pictures, take it to the master gardeners in your local extension office, or shoot either of us an email with it. We can maybe look at it more, but I don't know if it's anything we could solve here on air.
Yeah, but it could be a nutrient issue.
There's got to be some reason that just some of the flowers aren't forming, and my guess is that it has to do something with mobilizing nutrients up to that area, because if you don't have enough of certain nutrients, you can't get the buds.
Or what about a water issue? If we had a dry?
I would really expect to see leaf damage too. Like you wouldn't have leaves on those tips too.
Oh, okay.
See, and I'm leaning more towards something weather-wise is killing the outer buds.
Cold.
So I think we're agreeing to disagree on this one. But that, I mean, sometimes you just never get an answer, especially in a situation like this.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Get some pictures. If it happens again, take some pictures and get it into your county extension agent.
Well, and one of the things when people come to us with problems, one of the important things that we need to know is the story behind the situation. A lot of times they bring us like a little needle and go, what's killing my tree? And that's by no means enough information there. But if they can come in and tell us what's been going on in that location for the last several years, what the weather's like, how much sun it gets, how the wind blows through there, a lot of times that reveals some information that helps us solve the problem.
Okay. Well, I tell you what, you can join in, too, with your questions at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. And let's go to Annie in Madison. Annie, hi.
Hi. I was just repotting a mint plant when this show came on, so I thought I'd call and ask you guys about it.
All right.
Every winter, I try to bring in herbs and keep them, you know, in my kitchen over the winter. And every winter, my mint and rosemary dies. And I was wondering if you guys have any recommendations about how to keep them alive.
I would say with rosemary, the number one killer of rosemary is you have to keep your soil always just slightly moist. You can't let them get wet, and you can never, ever let rosemary get dry. I kill mine every winter. I try to I try to keep it longer than I did the year before, but inevitably life gets busy, and I forget to water, and I know exactly what I did. And you just have to forgive yourself for those kind of things. But there are a lot of herbs that are brought in during the winter, and you have to realize they're annuals, so they only have a one-year life cycle. So they really have to die.
Okay.
And then they produce their seed, and then you can replant the seed that comes off of. Most herbs don't have any kind of really specialty breeding processes going on. You can just collect the seeds and replant them. But, you know, the longer you can keep them alive, you know, sometimes there's a humidity issue, too. When it's dry in the winter, the plants don't do well with that and the lack of sunlight. So, yeah, so you got to try to balance them and just do your best and keep them alive as long as possible.
Okay. One thing is that I have a fluorescent light mounted on the bottom of one of my cabinets in my kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
Will that help sort of substitute for sunlight that they'll be lacking in the winter?
It won't substitute, because fluorescent lights are just kind of the blue and purple spectrum on a light, and you really need those reds and oranges, too. They actually cause leafing and things like that. It'll help, especially if you've got a low-light situation, but the more natural light you can give it, the better.
Okay.
All right.
Great. Well, thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. And typically, those fluorescent lights in the ceiling are a good 5-6 feet away.
Mm-hmm. They don't have the intensity to really give the plant what it needs.
Yeah.
Nothing beats good old sunlight.
Mike Maddox and Kristen Krokowski are with us today. Mike, UW Extension Horticulture Educator out of Rock County, and Kristen, Waukesha County Extension Commercial Horticulture Educator. Got a question about the flowers or the vegetables or the trees or the lawn? Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer, here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Mike Maddox and Kristen Krokowski are guests today on this edition of Garden Talk. CB and Superior is up next with a question, so we will go right there. Hi, thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call.
Yes, what can we do for you?
I have dug up roots from my grandmother's old homestead of the old style rose bushes.
Okay.
And I have planted them, and they grow like crazy, lots of foliage, and they look real healthy, but they never bloom.
Yeah.
Can you tell me, is this a useless project?
Not necessarily.
How long have you had them in the ground?
It's a good 4 years.
And are you cutting them back any?
Yes, I cut them back every fall, and okay. I dig out and cut off the roots from the suckers that come up.
What I'm wondering is if you got the roots of a hybrid tea. Because if you got the roots, what happens with hybrid tea roses is they're grafted, and the pretty part, the flowering part, is grafted onto our hardier rootstock.
Even with the very old ones?
These plants were at least probably around 100 years old.
Okay. Yeah, I mean,
so they're
definitely...
very, you know, I don't know whether they'd be hybrids or not.
Well, I think it's going into that we lost the story behind them to know how they originated, what type they were, if they were grafted at all.
Do you remember what they looked like in your grandmother's yard? Were they kind of shrubby?
Yeah, they're very small. There was a pink one and a white one, and it's a big bush. You know, the old, I don't know, would you call those floribundas or what do you call them?
Are you fertilizing?
Yes.
That
maybe
might
too
be
much.
Yes, and that's what I'm thinking. If they look that great and they're that green and they're growing, what plants will do is if you over-fertilize them, they'll put all of their energy into the green shrubby growth and they won't flower.
Uh-huh.
So I would try cutting back on that fertilization substantially and see if that improves the situation.
Well, what I use is a well-rotted horse manure.
That could be the case. Just lay off the manure and the fertilizer. It should be fine. Sounds like it's growing.
Yeah, but
enough. just light it up. A lot of people do that. They get too overzealous with their plants, and they give them too much fertilizer.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do that, that can almost cause as many problems as not enough fertilizer.
You could also try a soil test, and that would give you a very good idea of how much organic matter and nitrogen you have in that soil and the other nutrients that are there. And then it'll give you an idea of how much you have to back off. Organic matter levels, we're really looking at 3 to 5% in a normal soil, and I've seen soil tests come back over 15%.
The root systems, I mean, they've taken over my whole flower bed.
They sound very happy.
Yeah, they sound very happy. You got to cut back on that. That's the first thing that entered my mind.
Too much fertilizer,
yeah.
Okay, well, I will take your advice.
All right. Save yourself a little work and maybe have better results.
It's always amazing when we have to tell people to do less.
Do less, yeah, do less. I'm good at that. Dorothy and McGuanigo, it's your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you. I need to know if I can break up and transplant some rhubarb plants at this time of the year.
I assume the leaves have died back, or?
Well, they are still sort of greenish, but they look pretty sad.
Yeah, I think you're fine. You just don't want to do it during the active growing season because it can be really stressful. But if you do it now and move them around and just make sure they're mulched in really well for the winter, it might take about 2 years before they really start to take off and start seeing some size again.
Very good.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, I get busy now.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Dorothy. Get busy. Get the shovel out. Well, stay listening, though. Take the radio out with you. Let's go to David and Holman. Your turn. Hi, David.
Hi there. I have two questions, actually. We just recently moved into a house that has a big lilac patch, and I'm noticing that I have a lot of little suckers and everything and smaller bushes that I'm looking to transplant. I've been told three different things, that first you should, you know, dig around it and just leave it, transplant in the spring. I've been told that you can transplant them, just cut them out and plant them now. I've been told that I can just transplant them in the spring. My second question is, I'm having a little bit of problem with creeping Charlie. And I know there are some weed killer or stuff that I could put on there, but it seems like it's kind of a little poisonous. I'm looking for, like, maybe a greener alternative to get rid of it.
Okay.
Well, I'll take the lilacs. All right. Well, pretty much what you said for all three options would sort of work. I don't think you can go wrong with moving them all. I think kind of like what Kristen said with the rhubarb, you don't want to move it while it's actively growing. That's always going to be stressful for plants. Right now, with its fall, if you can dig up a chunk of those lilacs and it has substantial roots on it and you can move it, go for it. Just make sure you water it in, give it some mulch, and let's see what happens in the spring and summer for regrowth. You can also come in the spring and redo it. and move them to where you want. Again, follow up with good watering through the year. The trick is, in both those cases, you want to move them while they're not actively growing up top, and you move enough roots in order for them to establish. That comment regarding about digging around them first and then moving them later, what that's doing is whatever root that may be in that potential root ball, you're severing it and you're doing a little bit of root pruning to make for a denser root system in that area that you will be transplanting, and that might increase a bit of your success.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
All right. Good luck. And then about the Creeping Charlie, we're a little late on the chemical applications now, I think.
And to look at a greener alternative, Creeping Charlie is one of those few weeds that we have out there that we only have a very limited kind of arsenal for. I would say if you're looking for something a little greener and a little less toxic, you're going to have to dig them out.
Yeah. There are some home remedies out there, but you have to be awfully, awfully careful with those home remedies, borax and so forth.
Yeah, and technically those are all illegal to apply. So we'll stick with the science part.
Even though University of Iowa has on its website a formula for applying water and borax to a lawn.
Yeah, I'm sure the pesticide regulation people haven't been after them. I'm sure they're not going to make that argument.
I have a large patch of it, and I've been told that boiling water is also an effective. If I were to put boiling water over the entire patch to essentially kill the entire patch, do you think that will take care of it?
No, but if it is a large patch and you want to kill it, you might try putting something like either black plastic or some people use paper bags, and then you just cover it up and, you know, make sure it's weighted down, and the lack of sunlight should kill it. But you're going to have to leave that in place about a year.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And then one way to try and keep it out or at least slow it down is to practice good lawn care.
Whatever you can do to build up the vigor of your turf so to outcompete it, that's always helpful. But sometimes, especially with that little patch of Creeping Charlie I have in my own yard, I just can't seem to beat it without chemicals. So personally, I've just grown to enjoy the flowers.
we've raised the cutting height on our lawnmower quite a bit more now, and I think if you're cutting really short, you're going to encourage Creeping Charlie.
Most weeds, absolutely. The recommendation from the university is 3 to 3.5 inches because most people have Kentucky bluegrass yards. Kentucky bluegrass is really kind of invasive, so at a mowing height of 3 to 3.5 inches, it usually can outcompete most weeds.
Yep, that's a good thing to do.
I would say while we're on the talking of turf, let's keep in mind Halloween's coming. And when we talk about fertilization of turf, Halloween is probably one of the better times to put down your fertilizer. I know sometimes it's odd, you know, to go out there in your Halloween costume spreading the fertilizer, but it is a good time to put down that winterizer.
Yep, it's a good time to do it, and that's coming up. So mm-hmm. I've got my fertilizer ready to go. I'm just waiting another week.
It's on my weekend to-do list.
Let's go to Nancy and Madison next. Nancy, hi to you.
Hi there. I have a quick question for you about tulip and daffodil bulbs.
Okay.
Is it too late to plant those here in the Madison area?
No. You can plant those until the ground freezes.
Really?
Yep.
Awesome. Do I need anything to prep the ground? I've got mulch once I get them planted.
I think your biggest problem will be squirrels.
Once you
get those bulbs in, those squirrels have this knack for knowing right where you put them. And we'll dig them up, and they can find them to be pretty tasty. Once you get those bulbs in, you might want to cover them up with some chicken wire.
Yeah, okay. Hardware cloth,
just to keep them from being dug up by those rodents. Some people put on a layer of something smelly, malarganite or some other type of product that has an odor that will help keep the squirrels away. But I think that might be your bigger problem, is just the critters.
Okay, if I put the wire mesh down, I just need to remember to bring that up in the spring?
Most definitely.
That's right.
Yeah,
okay.
Most definitely.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. But that's that wire mesh, the hardware cloth,
mm-hmm.
that's about as effective as you're going to get.
Yep.
Mark in Richland Center, on to you. Hi, Mark.
Hello. I have a oak tree that was given to me, recently dug and put in a pot. I know it's the wrong time of year to dig oaks. So it's maybe a 3/4 inch caliper tree, 8 foot tall, and it's in maybe a 10 gallon pot. I don't know how much roots are with it. It doesn't have a lot of bud formation for next year yet. Is there anything I can do to help it, like maybe not put it out, but keep it in the
milk house or something
so that it doesn't have as severe a winter? Can I stimulate the root growth?
No, I think about the best thing you can do is plant it properly. Don't put it in too deep. When you're planting, make sure it has adequate roots. I mean, you said 8 foot tall. You're going to need to make sure it has a decent root system on that tree.
Well, all I've got is what they gave me when he dug it.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's say the price is right for you. But if there's no roots on there or not enough roots to get it established for a tree that tall, it's going to be a little difficult. What you need to do is get it planted, get whatever root system that is on there spread out into that planting hole, backfill with soil that's native to the site that you're putting in, and put down about 2 inches of mulch over that planting hole to help insulate those roots from the upcoming winter. Then make sure you give it some good fall watering. Those roots are going to try to grow until the ground actually freezes, and you don't want to hinder that at all. As for putting anything on those roots to make them grow better, I know there's products that are sold out there as root stimulators. I personally don't see an advantage in using those. So, again, I'm going to stick with my less is more philosophy and just put it in the ground correctly, give it some water, and let's hope for the best next year.
And I'm visualizing that 5-gallon pail, and what you really – you don't want to make a hole that looks like a 5-gallon pail. There's some good you want to make kind of a dish like
– You're going to want to make like a large saucer.
Wider hole.
Yeah. And there's a lot of good information out there about new tree planting, especially with the new recommendations are out. But, yeah, basically where that root system flares out, it's not going to be any deeper of a hole than that. With an 8-foot tree, you're going to need to consider staking it too so it doesn't fall over.
And then if I want to move some baby oaks that I have, I wait till spring?
You know, moving those young oak trees that have self-seeded in is always a bit of a trick. Always getting them when they're smaller is better. What you need to do, too, is sever that taproot first. If you can come in this fall, let's say, and just do an undercut on them to sever that taproot, what that's going to do is promote a fibrous root system forming up top. And that'll aid your transplanting the following year. So if you have...
Until the following fall or in the spring?
What's your opinion on that, Kristen?
Oaks are always tricky to transplant.
Yeah.
I mean, if you get them young and you transplant them, I would give them a shot in the spring. Just make sure you keep water on them. I wouldn't do much in the way of fertilization because that's going to push the growth when you don't have enough roots on it.
Yeah.
Right.
All right.
So, okay.
Thanks for calling. Good luck. Appreciate your call. And let's see. We've got an email here from Jean. And Jean says, my forsythia and azaleas are in bloom right now, outdoors. They bloom normally in the spring and have been healthy all summer. Will this damage them going into winter? How unusual is this?
There's got to be some reason they got heat.
Well, on some plants, I know like on my magnolia, it will occasionally do a fall bloom. When those days start getting shorter again and the weather starts getting cooler, as in like it does in the spring, sometimes it flushes flowers. That on my plant is not really detrimental, but
Does it still bloom in the spring then?
Yeah, it's more profuse bloom in the spring. But that's my magnolia. What you just described for your other plants, I don't know what the outcome of that will be for next year. You may have less buds or less flowers. I would call it a fluke, and I'd keep an eye on it to see if it happens again. There's really nothing you can do about it other than wait it out.
No. All right, Rosalie and Rhinelander, your turn. Hi, Rosalie.
Yes, I have a large mountain ash tree. It's over 20 years old. In the last 3 or 4 years, the sapsuckers have been making holes all the way up the limbs on the trunk, and the bark is turning black on my tree, and I'm thinking it's probably dying from that. I was wondering anything I could do to help that.
My opinion on mountain ash is they got about a good 20 years in them, then they die.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm a little cynical with them. I see too many of them that do croak. They're a heartbreaker. They get nice and start looking good and really get you to buy into them. Then they get all sorts of problems.
Okay.
So as for anything you can do, off the top of my head, I wouldn't recommend anything. Cause
okay.
And if a sapsucker's in there, they're looking for bugs. There's some kind of an insect inside of the tree. Mm-hmm. And that insect's probably doing more damage up front than the sapsuckers do. Usually sapsuckers just kind of finish off a tree.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Sheila in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Sheila.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two questions. My first question is, I started a compost pile this year for the first time, and it's actually in a round, it's in a ball called a bio ball.
Okay.
And I'm wondering what to do with all the compost now. Do I put it in the earth right now before it freezes, or do I wait till next spring? And my second question is about tomato plants. I also started growing tomatoes for the first time this year, and I grew two varieties. One was red and one was a yellow tomato, and my red tomatoes were attacked by slugs. I barely got any fruit for myself, so I'm wondering how to keep the slugs off the tomatoes in a green way.
Well, I'll start with the compost. Put it wherever you want, anytime you want. It's going to act as a slow-release fertilizer. It's going to benefit the plants wherever you put it. I see no timing issue with putting it on, especially if it's in one of those little balls. You're not going to really have enough to make any big change in your landscape right mm-hmm. away. So spread it about a half an inch to an inch deep wherever you want to put it, and it should be fine. Or incorporate it into the ground if you'd like.
Kristen, what about those slugs?
Well, and the only other thing I would add is that if you are using that for your vegetable garden, which would be an excellent idea wherever you're planting tomatoes, I would tend to say put it on in the fall and give it a chance to kind of mellow a little bit before we get into the spring, and then you can plant right into it. But we have an excellent green option for slugs, and it's called beer.
Yeah.
Slugs seem to really like beer, and probably the easiest thing to do is get a can of beer, and you can either pour it into a saucer, a little bit in a saucer, or some people just pour out most of the beer and do what you wish with it, and then leave a little in the can and put the can down sideways underneath a shrub or something where there's some good shade, and strangely enough, slugs like beer a lot better than they like tomatoes.
Okay, thanks very much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You'd be amazed at how many you can get.
Actually, I'm thinking I need to use that excuse for the next time somebody sees a beer can laying in my yard.
Well, it's like, and it's nice because they're not really picky about the kind of beer they drink. So
you can
stuff.
Yep.
Pam in New Auburn, we're on to you now. Hi, Pam.
Hi there. My question is about knockout rose bushes. I bought some earlier this spring, and they're just beautiful. And I'm wondering if there's something I should do to them to get them ready for winter. And my favorite one is in the form of a tree, a rose tree. So is there something special? I live in New Auburn. It's kind of cold.
Well, I just put in a whole bunch of knockouts this year, too. And one of the things about knockouts that make them great is they're on their own rootstock. So in case they do die back, they should come back true to type. I am, however, going to do a little bit of mulching around them just to give them a little extra protection once the ground freezes. So I'm going to take the leaves from the trees, pile them up around there to give them that protection. And then next spring, I'll prune out what actually died on the branches. They're supposed to be pretty easy going, but I've also noticed, too, that some people don't have a lot of luck with them in the long run. They have like a good longevity for about 7 years before they peter out on you. So I'll just give you that warning right now.
Okay. Well, if mine live for 7 years, I'll be happy.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Pam. Thanks for calling. And let's see. We've got Lillian from Green Bay up next. Hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have an azalea plant that I got a little over a year ago. And I set it outside this summer, and it has gotten really big. It's overgrown the pot,
mm-hmm.
and I was wondering if I would cut it back, would I still get some flowers, or how do I get it to blossom again?
Well, you've got it in a pot, you say?
Yes.
And what are you going to do to overwinter it?
Well, I was just going to bring the pot back in.
It sounds like it's a houseplant azalea. It's okay. Not something that's hardy here.
All right.
Right.
Oh, boy. Sometimes just getting those to overwinter might be the first problem. If it was a gift, did you remove any of the wrapping around it, the foil in that?
Yes, I did.
Okay,
yes,
good.
I did.
A lot of people will kill them by leaving that on. All right, so now it's just keeping it simple. You need to get over winter, put it into a north or east-facing window, I think would be fine for an azalea. I haven't grown one indoors. You're going to want to be careful with the nutrients, not over-fertilize it during the season, over the winter. And in the spring, I think what you're going to have to do is slowly start increasing some nutrient levels on it. And as the day length's getting longer, that will hopefully stimulate flowering. for indoor houseplant azalea. I am not done them myself, but just knowing what I do about plant biology, hopefully that'll trigger some flowering for you.
I would check the roots, too. If it looks like it's starting to get root-bound in the spring, I would transplant it, and then I would start looking to increase the your fertilization, and hopefully that will kind of pop some blooms out.
Is there a special kind of soil if I wanted to repot it and put it in a new, bigger pot because it's overgrown?
Well, what you're going to want to do is make sure it is a potting soil, for starters. You don't want to use topsoil. I know the price can be, you know, somewhat nice to see, but you actually want a potting soil. And actually, the container that you planted in shouldn't be more than an inch or two bigger than the one you're currently in. You don't want to give those roots too much soil around them, because that'll actually promote root rot. You only want to move up to just the next biggest size pot when you're transplanting.
Okay. My concern was if I would cut it back, would I be cutting off where it would blossom again?
It's hard to say, because most of the plants that you get as azaleas are from the south, and they're just not hardy here, so we don't have a ton of experience with those.
Okay.
I'm not sure if they bud set in the fall, but that would be my guess. So I would take a look and see if you can find any flowering buds on them, but I would wait and trim back until after you see if it flowers or not.
Okay.
All right, good luck.
And then I have another question.
Okay.
I dug up some daylilies and iris a couple of weeks ago, and I have a friend that I would like to give some to. It's getting kind of late to replant them, so is there some way I could keep them over winter to give them away in spring?
Well, my experience with daylilies is I had a neighbor who wanted to give me daylilies, and it was about this time of the year, and she called me over as I was doing a whole bunch of yard work. She goes, "Do you want these daylilies?" I'm like, "Yeah, sure." So I picked them up, moved them over to the other side of the property line on a mine. I dropped them and left them there over winter on top of the ground. The following year, they started to grow out like that. And so my point is, for daylilies, they're Sherman tanks. They're really tough. Okay. I would still try putting them into the ground. Just make sure you mulch them after the ground freezes to prevent heaving. You might even be lucky and get by with your iris and trying them that way. I think you'd have better luck trying to put them in now than trying to overwinter them.
Right.
Okay.
All right. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Mike Maddox, Rock County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, one of our guests. The other, Kristen Krokowski, UW Extension, Waukesha County Extension Commercial Horticulture Educator. Here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Net. Larry Mealer with my guests, Mike Maddox and Kristen Krokowski. Glad to have them on and happy to have you listening in. Gang, we got an email from Muriel, who collected some false indigo seeds from a plant she grew in her yard. She Googled for information about germination and found out you can nick or boil the seeds before planting. So just for the heck of it, she tried both methods, and almost all the nicked seeds germinated and are now about 2 inches tall. Only a few of the boiled seeds germinated. Now the experiment's over. She doesn't want to lose the plants that have germinated. She says, "I can't set them out. I probably can't send them out until next spring. Wonder what will I? How can I be successful growing them over winter in my kitchen window? My kitchen window gets east and south sun, so there's no lack of light during the day."
Good luck with it. That's not a typical house plant. In fact, it's hard enough to grow in the yard for some people, but I think having it in that south or east-facing window would be best through the winter months. And like what we described for the other houseplant and overwintering, is you need to be careful with your moisture during those winter months. You don't want to give it too much to promote a root rot. I think that'll be your biggest problem. I think if you're going to do any kind of germination for next year, do it in the spring, probably about April or May, so then you can transplant those out accordingly and have them harden off that way. I'm glad you had success.
I just don't think the experiment's over.
No. Well, what about this one? Well, here's a suggestion actually from Phil. Someone called earlier about planting bulbs, and Phil says, "I've had good luck planting spring blooming bulbs in the fall by using a battery-powered drill with a large spade-type bit, placing the bulb in the hole and then After tamping the dirt over the bulb, I sprinkle some dried hot pepper flakes liberally on the disturbed earth, and it's almost 100% effective.
Yeah, and that was one of those strategies you can use for keeping the critters out. You can buy bulb augers that'll fit on your drill, and that'll make those single holes, and that's a nice way to scatter the bulbs through the yard and have them spread that way. Personally, the way I like to plant my bulbs, and for me it's a lot easier, is I'll dig a hole probably 3 feet around to the depth of the bulb plant, and I'll put all my bulbs in there and then have them come up as a cluster. I find in my yard it's a little more impact that way, and easier to dig that hole versus using that drill sometimes.
Jim in Black River Falls, we're on to you now. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I planted two apple trees last fall, put fencing around them to keep the deer away, but the mice got one of them. They girdled it. And I'm putting in a new one this year, and the two questions I have. What can I do to protect the trees? And number two, do they have to be the same variety of tree for pollination purposes?
As for protecting from mice, there are a lot of tree guards that you can buy that kind of fit around the base of the tree. Most of them are plastic. And basically, they're just like a coil of plastic, and you kind of wrap them around the tree and slide them down. The trick is that if you have snowfall that gets above that tree guard, you're going to need to either put something on the trunk to kind of dissuade the mice from coming up there, or you're going to need to get another tree guard to put on top of that. And that just prevents the mice from getting in there, or voles, or whatever you have. Apple trees, it depends what kind of an apple tree. Some are self-pollinating and some have to be cross-pollinated. So it really depends on what kind of apple tree you have.
What do you have?
These are Gala apples.
No, I think you should be fine, but I would have to double-check that one.
Well, and also, too, there typically are enough crab apples and other apple trees out there, so the pollen is getting around, and the cross-pollination typically isn't an issue unless you're just in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, I agree completely.
Okay.
It's a wooded area. Is there anything I should do with the soil when I put this tree in?
Keep it simple. Put it into the soil that is native to that site to have the tree grow there. If you start amending that soil, the root system of a tree really wants to grow beyond what the planting hole would be, so you want to discourage them just staying there. So just use the soil native to the site and don't do a lot of crazy stuff to it.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, thanks, Jim. And Mark in Elkhorn, your turn now. Hi, Mark.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I got two questions. One, I live next to a lake. I want to put the seaweed from the lake, or lake weed, on the garden in the fall, about 3 inches deep. And then the other question is, can I grow anything in the house like potatoes over the winter in the garage? I got a semi-heated garage, plenty of sunlight. Will it produce?
I'll take the seaweed question. You said 3 inches deep. You want to put 3 inches of seaweed deep on your garden?
On top, yes.
That might be a little thick. I'm not sure what the consistency of it is, but my experience from the lake weeds that we've get around here is that they can really become matted down, and that might create a barrier for oxygen. You might want to be careful with them. I think that's what I'm going to have to say, or mix them in as a compost if that's the case.
You might want to consider composting them and turning them into some kind of better mix, because I would worry about them.
Yeah, I think if you just put them on as a 3-inch layer, as it'll form a film over the top, and that'll cause a problem. Till them in if you can.
Yeah, okay, absolutely.
Yeah. A friend of mine put them on a foot thick, and that didn't work out so well.
No.
Balls of whatever all over the whole year.
No, usually the recommendation is about 2 inches deep when you put down anything. So,
all right. Then we have the other question.
And then, as for your garage, a lot of people have a lot of success with greens and spinach and things like that during the winter. So if you wanted to do, and those are very easy to do in like fabricated beds, like a raised bed type situation, you can put a bottom on that and just make sure you have some drainage. And then you could probably have some really good success with definitely greens and spinach and things in that family.
I actually grow spinach in a cold frame in my backyard in window boxes. So I've taken a bunch of window boxes, put in potting soil, and I'll grow the lettuce and spinach in there through the late season here, and I'll start them early in the spring. And the cold frame I have them in will keep them warm enough for those cool season crops.
I can't wait.
All right. Okay. Good luck. Thanks a lot, Mark. And, boy, we've got some more emails here. Terry in Onalaska has three white pines. Two of them he planted last fall. One he planted a couple weeks ago. His question is on watering them in preparation for winter. He says, do I and how much? And does too much water cause white pine needles to turn brown and eventually die, maybe even killing the tree?
Well, yes, too much water can be detrimental on your tree depending on your soil type. They can drown the roots and lead to root rot and other problems. But also, as we said earlier, going into the fall, our evergreens keep their needles on all season long. And during the winter months, they can lose moisture. So it's going to be very critical to keep the root area well watered so those trees stay hydrated going into the winter months.
Is it still the inch a week, equivalent of an inch a week?
I would say yes. Depending on what Mother Nature provides, you make up the difference. But there are some variables there, soil being one. If you're in a sandy soil with good drainage, you might do a little bit more water versus clay. Or what are you using for mulch? Do you have them well mulched? That'll help trap moisture underneath versus no mulch. It could be losing moisture.
And I would definitely take a look at if you're seeing browning needles on a white pine, I would definitely have somebody look at those or bring them to an extension office to take a look at. It can be lack of water when you have browning needles, but there are a lot of evergreen diseases out there. And if you do have one of those, even in a minor way, it's good to take care of it quickly before it becomes a big problem, especially if you have three white pines together. A good disease could take out all three of those.
Mm-hmm. Blister rust or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Andrew and Eden, thank you for waiting. Hi.
Good morning. I have two questions. The first regards what to do with the spent brewing waste, like the malt and the hops.
Okay.
Do I have to compost it or put it directly to the garden? And the second one, I tuned in a little late on the conversation about transplanting a tree. I'm just curious about the timing of moving a volunteer tree from one spot in the property to another.
What kind of tree have you got?
Soft maple.
Okay. All right, malt and hops. I guess you'd probably want to...
Well, I don't know what the content of that would be, but we've had questions similar with coffee grounds. And coffee grounds are great for the compost pile, but I would have to say nobody's ever asked me about
malt and hops, but I'd put those in the compost.
I'm guessing there's a lot of cellulose in there,
yeah.
So I would definitely... Because, it's not high nutrient, you need to break down that cellulose in the compost to make it available to plants. So if you put things that need to be broken down yet into your soil, it can rob nutrients from the plants because it needs those to mm-hmm. decompose. So I would compost them first. I wouldn't add them directly to the soil around your plants.
I think they're pretty well broken down by the time you get through the brewing process.
No. I'm kind of a vodka guy. I'm not real sure.
Okay, so what about the tree?
With the tree, if you missed the first part, one of the things I said was to make sure whenever you transplant something, make sure it has adequate root system on it. To do it at a time that it's not actively growing is better than when it's in full leaf and growing. So if you have a soft maple, say it's a silver maple, as long as you transplant it and there's enough root system on it, it should be fine. Something like that should have no issue with transplanting.
Spring or fall?
Not actively growing. So we're talking, you can give it a chance now to try to do it all the way up to the time where it starts to leaf out in the spring while the ground's not frozen.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Sharon and Shatek, on to you now. Hi, Sharon.
Good morning.
Morning.
Way back to azaleas. I winter mine in the garage because it's cold up here in Barron County, but... The little pineapple buds are on them now, and I don't think you cut back azaleas. I don't know about the houseplants, but I don't think you do them either.
I know with rhododendrons and azaleas, again, the less pruning on them you do when they're the outdoors type that we can grow around here, the better.
Mm-hmm.
But, she was asking about the indoor type that...
I know, but I don't think they're that different, and I can't say from experience. I overwinter all my roses. I have hybrid teas and bushes and... David Austin, and I overwinter them all in the garage, and it's been heated. This year it will not be heated because I'm being conservative, but I think they still will be fine, and I've done this for probably 15 years.
Yeah, all right. Good enough. Thank you for calling.
You bet.
I appreciate it, Sharon. And Cheryl in Oconomowoc, on to you. Hi, Cheryl.
I have a question about a Douglas fir tree. We have a couple in our front yard, and it started... losing needles, and they turn brown, rusty color, and now some of the branches are totally bare on the southeast side of the tree, and I was wondering if there's any diseases that could cause that.
Southeast side of the tree. Did you say how old it was?
Oh, it's a good 30, 35 feet tall. It's the house was built in the 20s, and I believe the tree is planted around that time.
And do you water?
No, we haven't watered those big trees.
The only reason I ask is when we're talking about fungal diseases, usually we see them on the north or east side of the tree because that's the coolest side of the tree.
Oh.
When we start seeing needle loss on the hottest side of the tree, which is usually the south-southwest side of the tree, especially if it's getting a lot of direct sunlight, usually that tells me that it's a good possibility that the needles are dehydrating. They don't have enough water. And we really have been... even though we've had really strange rainfall patterns, we really have been in some sort of drought for almost 5 years now.
Oh, okay.
So definitely you can, since you're in Oconomowoc, you're more than welcome to bring it to the Waukesha County Extension Office, and I'll take a better look at it. Or you can call a certified arborist or somebody else who's knowledgeable about tree diseases, but it would definitely be a good idea to take a look at.
Thank you very much for calling. Mike Maddox and Kristen Krakowski, our guests here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mealer with my two guests, Extension Horticulture Educators Mike Maddox and Kristen Krakowski, here to answer your questions. And we have some more emails. Romeo in Green Bay emailed quite a while back and says they have two trumpet vines that are over 5 years old and haven't flowered. Any hints on that?
I've heard of that happening before, and it's usually just give it time.
Well, and the only other thing I would consider is if you're getting enough sunlight. A lot of things that don't flower, you may put them in the right place when you plant them, but over 5 years, you could get considerably more shade in that area. Mm-hmm. So you have to take into consideration how many hours of daylight they need and how many they're actually getting to make sure that they're going to flower.
And from Plover, we have a large chrysanthemum in a 12-inch pot. To keep it, should it be transplanted or let go dormant in the basement?
Oh, boy. Chrysanthemums, if it's in a pot, it will need to be overwintered somewhere, or you can try healing it in. Some people treat chrysanthemums as an annual and will get a new one the following year. I think the real luck with chrysanthemums is to get them planted in the yard in a place that has wintertime drainage. So they're not going to be sitting in soft, cool, wet ground over winter. That'll kill them.
Usually when people put things in the basement, they just let them linger in the basement, and usually they get so dry they just die.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Linda and Hilbert, your turn now. Hi, Linda.
Hi, I'm calling because a friend and I were talking the other day, and she was wondering if it's too late to plant asparagus, and also if she did want to, where she would find some this time of year.
Yes, absolutely. It is too late to plant asparagus. Asparagus is a spring planted usually, and usually what happens is you order it, and it comes to your door in spring, and you kind of hold on to it until your ground is ready. Make sure you prepare your bed with good fertility because you only get one shot at that since it's a perennial. But I definitely wouldn't recommend planting asparagus at this time of the year. Wait until next year, and then it'll take a year or two before you get a good production, but definitely wait until spring.
Okay, and can I ask another question, please?
Sure.
While listening to the speakers, they've been talking about transplanting trees this time of year. And I recently was ordering a tree to be transplanted in a different part of the state, and they were saying that it shouldn't be done after October 1st. Does that depend on what area you're living in the state?
What type of a tree is it?
It was a hawthorn.
Usually the recommendation is not to transplant evergreens in the fall because they need a little bit more time to put on roots before they overwinter. But it might just be the success rate that particular person planting has had and the experience they've had. So always, if you have people who know what they're doing – in your area, definitely listen to what they have to say.
Okay, yeah. But otherwise, if it's a deciduous tree, I could transplant now.
Those are the generalities, yes. Okay. If it is deciduous, do it while it's not actively growing. Keep in mind, horticulture is both an art and a science, and with time, yes. Some people who've experienced stuff have developed their own little artistic methods, you might say, mm-hmm. that probably can be reinforced with science.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. And we're on to Mark in Fox Lake, Illinois, next. Hi, Mark.
Hi, you guys. Hi, Larry, and Mike, and Christine.
Hey.
You guys are very knowledgeable. It's so impressive listening to you guys. I just wish I'd be on the weekends with the working folks can hear you, too. But anyway, I have two dogs, and instead of picking up their droppings, I hose it into the ground. Is that beneficial for my grass or not? I put gypsum down, too.
I'm sorry, where did you say you live?
Fox Lake, Illinois. It's a very clay, hilly area.
But
a lot of drainage.
Do you happen to know, by any chance, what the pH of your soil is?
No, I've never checked, but it's very green looking now.
Okay. I would check that because gypsum should only be applied on acidic soils, and most of the area in Wisconsin from the lake out to the Kettle Moraine area, which is is very basic or has a really high pH, so adding gypsum only makes the situation worse, especially with the clay soil. So I would check, get your pH of your soil checked before you add any more gypsum. As for the dog droppings, they're kind of high in nitrogen, so I really wouldn't advise that, but if you're not having problems, then you might want to just kind of go with it.
Well, he's watering them in, and that's
I think that's probably better in some ways, because you're helping it distribute it through the ground, and it'll be nitrogen leaching. But on the flip side of it, it's the environmental aspect of it, where that nitrogen from the dog droppings can just be leached out into the environment. I think, you know, I remember it. That was always kind of the family punishment growing up, was go clean the yard. So I don't know, if you don't have kids, I think you should ground them or something. And pick it up and dispose of it other ways.
All right, that's what I'll do, is just pick them up.
Just definitely don't use it on a vegetable garden.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling, Mark. Appreciate it. Joe in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Joe.
Hello. About 5 years ago, I planted 4 Wichita blue junipers as kind of like a screen or a windbreak or whatever. And they're now 8 feet tall. A couple years ago, I got tired of mowing around them, so I dug the grass out and I planted mulch around them. And every year, like I said, they've been growing great. And every spring, I've been fertilizing them. This last spring, I forgot to fertilize them. And this summer, they started turning brown. I think I lost about 15 to 20% of the foliage off of each one. The two middle ones were worse than the two end ones. And I'm just wondering if there's something common, there's some sort of common thing, or was it the mulch? I took the mulch out. I was wondering if that might affect it, or if that was one of the variables that I had changed over the years.
Yeah, there are a lot of variables there, so it's going to be kind of hard to decide. I'm going to stick with the fertilizer one. Again, we're kind of a fertilizer crazy nation, and I think a lot of times we fertilize our woody plants more than what they need. My typical suggestion is, if you fertilize your yard and the grass around those plants, they don't need fertilizer themselves. You're just causing too much top growth and not enough roots to support them.
Mm-hmm.
And what you just described was the top part basically crashing and dying. And it could be there was too much green growth up top and not enough roots in the bottom to support them. And with some of the weather we've had, maybe, again, they're evergreens, they weren't hydrated enough, etc. I'm not sure about that cultivar off the top of my head about disease susceptibility. It looks like Kristen's thinking here on it.
And did you say that most of the death was on the top, or was it on the, what part of the branches did you see the browning?
Actually, they went all the way down to the main trunk. And in fact, one of them, I lost one of the leaders.
So were they brown all the way to the end of the branches?
Yes. Okay. The whole branch died.
All right.
Any kind of pattern there? North, south, east, west?
Actually, no. In fact, that was another variable, is that my neighbor started, because of Creeping Charlie, she hired a service, and he was spraying their lawn. And he says that sometimes that defoliant will blow in the wind and it'll catch it, but it's actually all the way around the tree.
I would have side of the yard and their side of the yard.
I would have it looked at. I think there's a possibility there that you have some kind of a it might have been an insect problem that's gone now, but at least you can identify what it was and what happened so that if it happens again, you can do something about it.
And how do I go about doing that, getting it?
Well, you could try to take something to your county extension office and work with them, or you can turn to the yellow pages in your phone book and look under tree service and find a certified arborist to come
and
in.
Okay, and if I took a... I have to take a cutting to the extension office? Or?
Yeah, and usually we're looking for something that's partially alive and part dead, because dead things, it's kind of like doing a post-mortem.
Sure.
It's kind of hard to do.
Okay.
So something decent size, maybe about a foot long with dead and alive on it, because it's usually in that intersection between those two where we find all the good stuff.
Okay, and I take it there's one of those in La Crosse here, right?
Yep, give them a call.
Thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. And Tom and Stoddard, on to you now. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I wanted to add information for the lady with the azaleas. My wife and I had azaleas, which she brought from the hospital. Patients didn't want them, and so we had about 14 azaleas, which we left out on the patio until just the last possible day before you would have them get frozen or frostbitten, and that triggers blooming. So we would bring them in the house, and we'd have all kinds of azaleas blooming at Christmas time of many different colors, and it really works well. The biggest trick is to check them every day as you would a bonsai to make sure they don't go dry, and especially be watchful at the time of when you really get the sub-zero weather, so your humidity in the house is really going to change, and it might be a good idea to have a humidity
humidifier,
or not, I didn't mean a humidifier, a thermometer, well, a meter, humidity meter to watch your humidity.
Yeah. Excellent. Thanks, Tom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's appreciate the call. And if you've got that kind of condition, have a lot of fun with azaleas in around Christmas time. Christine loves the show, emailed us, writes also from Stoddard. She has two questions, one regarding a mini burning bush that she planted in the spring of 2007. It was a first-year plant, very tiny, it's done very well. It's now about a foot tall. She needs to move it as she puts a snowball bush near it, and now it's hidden as the snowball bush has gotten so huge. And should she move then it in the spring, the mini burning bush?
I think it sounds like a great weekend project for this weekend.
This weekend.
Again, like everything else, it's a deciduous plant. It's going to lose its leaves. You can move them when they're not actively growing. So in the fall or early in the spring, and in both cases, follow up to make sure it's adequately watered and mulched.
She's got a trumpet vine. It's in its second year. It grew very well this year, but no flowers. It's in full sun. Another year?
Yeah, another one, and then she'll probably be calling in 5 years on how to get rid of it. So
okay. That's what I thought. Joyce in Menominee Falls, on to you. Hi, Joyce.
Hi there. I have a tree peony that I procrastinated about getting in the ground. It's still sitting in its pot, and I'm wondering if I can still plant it. Is it too late, or should I winter it over in the pot in the ground?
Well, you can always heal them in. That is a good thing to do, and healing in is when you just kind of dig a temporary hole, put the plant in it, pot and all, and then backfill it with mulch or some loosely packed soil.
Mm-hmm.
And that can help overwinter it, so you can do it seriously in the spring. I've done that before when people've given me some plants that I've decided not to leave on top of the ground. And you just kind of trench them in and say, I'm going to deal with them later. And yes, you can do that. Or, you know, you could try planting it too. And if you know where you want it to go, who knows what kind of fall we're going to have. It could be mild from here on out, and it'll have plenty of time to get some roots in or not.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. John emailed in, has about 3 years ago planted two autumn blaze maples opposite the front corners of my house, about halfway between the house and the street. Wonders whether the root systems of these trees, which he understands are silver maple hybrid, are a threat to his sewer lateral.
Only, and I'm a son of a plumber, so keep that in mind, that will only be an issue if you have a crack in the lateral pipes. Those roots are going to grow where there's oxygen, and typically down deep in the soil is not where the oxygen is. So those roots are going to be up near the surface of the soil. If you have a crack in that pipe, there will be oxygen there that will then come up through the soil column. Those roots will detect it, then will grow down following that soil, and then will penetrate your pipe. So as long as all your plumbing's good, you should be fine.
And I remember from my previous house, was it once a year or every other year? I had to get somebody in there to run a drill through
get one of those Roto-Rooter
deals and have it taken care of.
Yeah.
About every other year.
It's actually a plumbing issue, and the pipe should be fixed. Same thing with cracks in the wall of your basement. It's not that the roots are hanging on the wall making a hole. It's they're just going to exploit something that has formed by other means.
Bob in Marquette, Wisconsin, your turn. Hi, Bob.
Good morning. I have a question on hydroponic nutrients. I've been experimenting growing hydroponic lettuce, and I wonder if you'd have any suggestions on something that could be used besides the commercially available ones.
No, they're very expensive. And there isn't really... It's really a special formulation of way that they balance the nutrients and make them very easily accessible to the roots. So there isn't really anything else out there. If you want to do hydroponic and you don't want to deal with soil, you're really kind of stuck with those fertilizer mixes that they sell.
Yeah, that's the problem is, you know, that, like you say, they are expensive and they're kind of hard to come by. You can't just find them at any corner store. And I just
Soil can be okay. It can be your friend. Maybe you might want to give that a shot.
Okay. Thanks, Bob. Thank you very much for calling. Chris in Slinger emailed in. Someone called because his trumpet vine hadn't blossomed in 5 years. My suggestion is to ask if he cuts back old growth as it blossoms on second-year growth. I grew mine, and it did not receive sun all day, and as soon as I stopped cutting back old, dead-looking growth, it started blossoming. And she said, P.S., tell them to keep an eye on the vines. They can become quite invasive. She loves the show.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's typically the question I get about trumpet vines is, how do I get rid of the things because they take over people's yard? It's kind of novel to get them to say, they're not flowering. How do I do that?
And Arthur has 20-year spruce with needle dropout or die-out on the outside ends of the branches. Wonders if it's a disease and should it be removed before it affects other spruce.
I would definitely have it looked at. Usually when we see tip dieback, it's usually, especially if it's all around the tree or on the north side, it's worth taking a look at. It's usually a fungal infection. And if it's a low-level fungal infection, most of them can be taken care of fairly easily, a lot of them in an organic way. But you definitely need to get on that before it does get to a level where it will start spreading to other spruce.
And Doris asks how she disposes of used oasis material used by florists. And I'm not sure what an oasis material
it's
is.
It's the green foamy stuff that they stick flowers.
Oh, okay.
And I'm pretty sure you got to pitch it.
Yeah.
And what do they do in rotary gardens to keep down the numbers of rabbits?
We don't. We fight them as much as anybody else does. We do use malorganite as our fertilizer, and if anybody who uses it knows, that stinks to high heaven. And I think on those days that we have that fertilizer out, our rabbit population's pretty low.
The other thing you can do with rabbits is if there's any way to relocate them. They only go within less than an acre area. So if you have them and you can relocate them even an acre away, they usually won't come back to your yard.
Yeah, or a big dog is good.
A big dog is a good idea, too. Don in Green Bay, on to you now. Hi, Don.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got a couple of apple trees that we transplanted from a nursery about 8 years ago. And they've really taken quite well to the backyard. It's western facing. However, what I've been experiencing is we seem to get a lot of fall of the fruit coming off due to wind and that. And then also what I did this year is I did a little bit of trimming of the trees early spring. That seemed to produce more fruit this year, and it seemed to hold them on better. But my problem is I'm still seeing a fair amount of what I'll call scale on the fruit and some brown spots on the leaves.
Yeah, apples are kind of a tricky one because there are a few kind of disease-resistant varieties out there, but I would say of all the ornamental/food crops you can put in, apple trees are definitely the most disease prone. I can think off the top of my head 5 or 6 diseases that they get. The unfortunate thing is that if you do have apple trees and they're not disease resistant and you want to keep your apples completely clean, you're talking about spraying a lot of chemicals on and a 7 to 10 day rotation, and I just don't advise it for homeowners.
Okay.
One of the things you can do is bag your apples. It's actually what they do in Japan to keep their apples, and they're considered organic. So once the apples are the size of a quarter, you put a bag on them and you let them grow, and they turn out just beautiful looking. And it's the question of what kind of a volume of apples you're expecting and how much time you have to bag apples in the spring.
What kind of a bag do you use?
Just bag? A brown paper bag.
Yeah.
Lunch bag.
I've
yeah.
actually found a online file that people can watch, and I have it on the Rock County UW Extension website under the horticulture page. I forgot who produced it, but it actually shows someone in the U.S., putting bags on the apples and the whole process. It's been very useful for helping people, to instructing people on how to do this apple bagging.
And just with the pruning, I would be sure that you're pruning the trees during the dormant time. My suspicion is that you got so many apples this year with the spring pruning is because it wasn't dormant, and the tree thought when you pruned it in the spring that it was going to die, and it had to get as much seed out there as possible. It really stresses, especially apple trees, out if you prune them during their growth cycle. So if you can get in there in February and March, if we have one good nice day, it also helps if you prune them when there aren't leaves on them, because you can look at kind of the structure of the tree and see where you're going to cut it a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when I did the pruning this year, it was the end of March, beginning of April. That right in that time frame,
yeah.
We had a couple of nice days, and
yeah.
So I assumed at that time I was still pruning them early enough.
Yeah, as long as the leaves, if you don't have bud break, you're fine.
Okay. Yeah, no, there wasn't at that time. But, boy, they really came out not long afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thanks, Don. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. And Jackie in West Allis, your turn. Hi, Jackie.
Hi, Milwaukee. I had a tree service out, and there is a bush. There's a mulberry, and there's another one right now, which I can't remember. It's an invasive. And my neighbor said, you can cut it down. Can you do anything after cutting it down? Can you put anything on the roots?
Is it a buckthorn?
Does that... And killing my roots?
Is it a buckthorn or a honeysuckle?
That's buckthorn.
Okay. Oh, okay. Buckthorn, once you make that cut, you can apply the chemical glyphosate.
Yeah.
You can apply glyphosate right to the stump, but you have to do it immediately. It's, you know, the studies show that even 15 minutes later that those stumps can callus over.
Like Roundup or what?
Well, look at the back. Some of those weed products are 2,4-D and some are glyphosate. So you need to see on the back of the label, it'll have in little small print active ingredient, and you're looking for the word glyphosate. And you're better.
Glycosine?
Glyphosate.
I got that much. Okay.
Okay.
And I have to put it on right after my service cuts it off.
Yes, and it needs to be done in the fall, because what's happening in the fall is those trees are pulling all of those juices out of the tree and the sap, and it's bringing down the roots. And what it does is it pulls that glyphosate down into the roots and helps kill those.
The other thing is it's killing my garage roof. Okay, dear. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And boy, I guess we're about out of time here.
It always goes quick when somebody else is in here. I love it.
It always goes very fast. And I hope you guys will come back and do this again.
Oh, we'd be delighted.
Always.
A lot of fun. Mike Maddox is the Rock County UW Extension horticulture educator, works out of the Rotary Gardens in Janesville. What's that Rotary Garden website?
www.rotarygardens.org.
With an S.
With an S. And if you go there now, you'll see we have our holiday light show coming up. Hope to see you all there.
Wonderful. Kristen Krukowski, the Waukesha County Extension commercial horticulture educator. And, of course, the UW Extension's got a website that's a great website with lots of publications.
Mm-hmm.
To help you out, everything from vegetables to flowers to trees to lawns, you're going to find it on the UW Extension website. Really happy to have these two characters with me today, and we'll have them back again. Monday, we'll talk about apples on Monday, too, but they're Apple computers, with Joe Rhodes of Madison, and then our weather guys will appear as well. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.